It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
You gotta love Ted Nugent, right? The Motor City Madman has offered to give Kyle Rittenhouse a lifetime supply of ammunition. I love it. And he wants to start a gun training class in his name. Leave it to Terrible Ted to come up with something like that. But I love it. I mean, you know, Nugent is a one-of-a-kind, hardcore, screaming rocker conservative who has Donald Trump's disease, meaning he's never smoked a cigarette, he's never had a cocktail, he's never done any drugs. So he says he just likes to hunt and eat wild game and play a lot of screaming guitar. And that's it. Sorry to say that the Appletones were working on a gig with Ted Nugent. Wouldn't that have been fun? I mean, that was a pretty good combo, you know, to have us guys with his guys. And, you know, it's like the Appletones and Cheap Trick. But this one, if we had Nugent, it would be like one louder and 10 times heavier. But it fell through thanks to pandemics and all this other crap. But Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, he got the last word in. We got the first word in, actually, on Fox last night with Tucker Carlson. And we've got some audio of that. And he reacted pretty heavily to the media trial portrayal of everything that, you know, swirled around him in this first interview. And he was a little upset about that. I don't blame him a bit. I'm sure you would agree. Joining us at noon, the local sleuth who lives in the shadows, trying to find the answer that is the truth for people who hire him for whatever, and that is Detective Rocky Pipkin. He told me yesterday that those who are basically in charge of the overall Travis Scott Astroworld investigation, remember he was called in as a part of that? He was told yesterday to stand down. Stand down. Because apparently this guy is ready to basically accept service, turn himself in, listen to the citations, the lawsuits, all of this, any, you know, criminal crap that may be hanging over his head. You might speculate that maybe the mother of his children had something to do with this. And her last name is Jenner, and she's like a billionaire, and you get the picture right there. He was a ghost for a while, but apparently he's materialized, and I don't know much more than that, but we'll find out in the next hour. The last time Rocky was on, and I did ask him to call in if he was near a phone, he didn't say anything. He couldn't say anything. Just nothing evolved out of that, and that's the way it had to be. But I think today there's a chance we're going to get a lot more information now that this is maybe coming to a different phase of this whole thing. But you got to remember, I mean, this concert that he also co-promoted, and he was the big featured attraction there, it, you know, the stampede killed 10 people. So this is not a very positive situation for this guy, and he's probably wise to accept what's coming to him. So Rocky will join us at 12 noon. Getting back to Tucker Carlson for a minute. This is a weird story. It's very heavy. There are two longtime conservative Fox commentators, news commentators. They've resigned in protest over what they call a pattern of incendiary and fabricated claims by those on the network that give opinions like Tucker Carlson, all of it in support of President Trump. You'd think, you know, over there at Fox, they'd all be in the same league as conservatives. Ha-ha. Now, this takes a whole lot of splaining, and it's very serious, heavy-duty stuff. And we're going to get into it, and I'm going to try and lay it out as simplistically and easy as I can. I mentioned the other day that I can sort of take Tucker Carlson or leave him. And I've listened to some of the things he said about the incident that took place on January the 6th. And Donald Trump in general. And in the back of my mind, I knew what he was telling his audience was wrong. It wasn't correct information. And I used every available source I had to determine what the real deal was, including Devin Nunes and other names you would know from the Beltway and all kinds of sources. So on a few occasions, he's gone with some things that are, I'm trying to be kind, not necessarily factual. So this is kind of a dicey area, and you're going to have to pay attention to the story and everything that's spewing out of it to make any sense of you know, what's really going on over there at Fox. Yesterday, I talked about a name from the past. He's a little man, not in stature, but he's little in every other way. His name is Beto O'Rourke. in Texas. And looking at that governor's race in the great state of Texas, we have Beto O'Rourke opposing the GOP incumbent, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott. And we also have some guy named Matthew McConaughey. And it's not even clear yet if Mr. McConaughey is going to run as a Democrat or Republican or an independent. Now, if we look at the numbers, if it just came down to a race between McConaughey and O'Rourke, boy, it's a stark and staggering outcome there that I'll share a little later. If it's a three-way race with McConaughey and Beto and the current governor, the numbers are, yeah. I'm going to leave you hanging on a cliff for a little bit. But McConaughey, when he's talking political speak, if you listen to him carefully, it's apparent to me and a number of other people I've asked, you know, that we all agree in my little circle of buddies that he comes off as a diehard libertarian. But is he going to run as a libertarian? I don't know. We'll see what happens. But this is a great story, and we'll share it for sure today on KMJ and the Ray Appleton program. Kamala Harris stepped in it big time yesterday, in my opinion, calling for a healthcare workforce that looks like America. That's Obama speak. What the hell does that mean? Looks like America. You know, she's making this claim that from the COVID-19 pandemic, it's exposed systematic inequities in the healthcare system. So you hear this statement from her. We need a healthcare workforce that looks more like America. Is that her way of saying there are too many of us white folks that are in healthcare? Or, question mark, we'll see. We'll see. Last week, I had a story about a very scary number on drug overdoses in this country. It was a very sobering story. And we've had over, in a year, we've had over 100,000 drug overdose deaths, which is a big, ugly record. And that record, I would think, for the most part, really has not touched that many in Fresno. But what do I know? You know, do we have a lot of drug overdose deaths here or what? I can't speak to that, but Lisa Smitcam, the attorney general, yeah, she'd love to be the district attorney. She's sweating bullets that there's a new substance making its way into the drug scene here in the valley. And it's called carfentanil. And it's designed, for all intents and purposes, as an animal tranquilizer. The big animals. It's used by, you know, veterinarians to put down elephants that weigh 2 or 3 tons. You know, that always used to be a gag back in the 60s and 70s when the drug culture was running rampant. You know, I've got some stuff that'll knock an elephant over. Well, this is the stuff that really is used to knock an elephant over. It's already showing up in Southern California. It's headed our way. Now, fentanyl. Yeah, it's part of that whole family. Let's remember, it's 100 times stronger than morphine. I can't even imagine. And according to a local televised news report, this stuff is right around the corner, and it's making its way here, and this could really rip this community apart. And something that I predicted that President Biden said he would never do, he announced he's going to do. And I said he would have to do this. And I said this right after he got rid of the pipeline and fired, you know, 14,000 people and all of that. He announced today a plan to release oil from the Strategic Reserve, the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, as an effort to kind of tamp down the high gas prices facing us consumers. Now, with the Trump administration, this thing was sacred. It was never, ever going to be touched. You know, only if Martians invaded Washington, D.C., you know, would it be touched for any reason. Therefore, that torched the past president to work up this need for energy independence, which we achieved with his help, of course. And what happened to that? I don't have to tell you. You know what happened to that. We're energy independent no more. Now, pressed when he was on the campaign trail, Joe Biden, when he was asked about the Strategic Oil Reserve, the petroleum reserve, he said he would never touch it in his first term as president. And things would have to be, quote, beyond extreme before he would authorize dipping into the SPR. So is this his way of saying right now, today, a couple of days before Turkey Day, that circumstances are beyond extreme? Or does he even remember that he said that on the campaign trail? Yeah. And this is exactly, excuse me again, what our ideological enemies want us to do. They want us to dip into our reserves. And speaking of the bad guys, we've got intelligence that we've shared with our European allies, and they've shared their intelligence with us, that there's a heavy buildup of Russian troops, artillery and all, in preparation for a large-scale military invasion into Ukraine at multiple locations. In short, Russia is planning a Ukraine invasion. And this intelligence has been conveyed to NATO, the NATO members, over the past week. I've been to Ukraine, as you know, a number of times, and I can tell you in that country, this is a big generational thing. The older generation, and I mean maybe even a little bit older than me, they hearken back to those days of Soviet rule. They loved it. They would go back to that tomorrow. They didn't even know how to wipe their noses on their own. But it's the younger generation in Ukraine, which is fiercely opposed to any realignment with communism in Moscow. Fiercely opposed. And this is beginning to look like extremely serious business as Moscow has called up tens of thousands of reservists on a scale unprecedented in post-Soviet times. So we got to look at this one. We've got to look real hard at it. This could drag us and other allies into a mess that we really don't need. But there it is. Now, a couple of stories that you're not going to hear probably anywhere else. Michael does a good job of finding these stories I love. Goofy things about animals and history and outer space and antiquities and, you know, all that stuff. It's just to keep your brain nice and limber, you know, in many different areas. So it's not always politics, 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 for example. Here comes one of those stories of, gee, it was right under our nose the whole time. A priceless Roman mosaic that really is literally priceless. It's been discovered in New York. Now, this mosaic was once used as decoration on a ship that was used by the Emperor Caligula. And we know what a strange dude that guy was. So this priceless, once owned by Caligula, Roman mosaic, spent 50 years as a coffee table in a New York apartment. This is a great story. And maybe some of you caught part of it on 60 Minutes on Sunday, but of course, I have more than what you heard on Sunday. And another story that's going to turn you off from eating shellfish, if you like to consume lobsters and crab, and I like octopus. You know, they're right in there too, even though they're not considered shellfish. But we are hearing now, after a ton of scientific research, the crabs, lobsters, and octopus are extremely capable of feeling pain. And we've been under the impression for years and years that they could not feel that boiling water that they're tossed into while they're alive. That information is wrong. And science is saying we now need to treat them as sentient beings. What is a sentient being? I will explain to you. It's all coming up. So this means, if you are planning on having lobster for Thanksgiving dinner in lieu of turkey, you hate my guts right now. And just remember, I'm only the messenger, you know? But does this mean in this country, are we going to see laws evolve that will prevent the boiling of the decapods and cephalopod family? Don't know. But remember, when I get to that story, I am just the messenger. All right, I feel really bad. You know, as a guy who was like a big zoology major in school, and I love to consume crab and lobsters and all this stuff. Yeah, they don't feel it when they're thrown in the boiling water. Well, apparently the hell they don't. How would you feel if you were thrown into boiling water for somebody's dinner? 490-5858. Toll free from anywhere. 800-776-5858. It's the Ray Appleton Program. Here in living color on KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
Ray Appleton. Now.
Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
With your very kind permission, we're going to go to a speech now the president is giving allegedly on the inflation crisis and its impact on Americans. And we got a lot of crises going on right now. So let's eavesdrop for a little bit. President Joe Biden on KMJ.
You may have heard the CEO of Walmart yesterday on the steps we've taken. He said, and I quote, "The combination of private enterprise and government working together has been really successful." He went on to say, "All the way through the supply chain, there's a lot of innovation. Because of the actions we've taken, things have begun to change." End of quote. In the past 3 weeks, the number of containers sitting on docks blocking movement are down by 33%. Shipping prices are down 25%. More goods are moving more quickly and more cheaply out of our ports, onto your doorsteps and onto store shelves. And so all these concerns a few weeks ago, there would be there'd not be ample food available for Thanksgiving. So many people talked about that, understandably. But families can rest easy. Grocery stores are well stocked with turkey and everything else you need for Thanksgiving. And the major retailers I mentioned have confirmed that their shelves will be well stocked in stores this holiday season. And that's good news for those moms and dads who are worried about whether the Christmas gifts will be available. It goes for everything from bicycles to ice skates. You know, today, though, I want to address another challenge that families are facing, and the one I think they're most focused on right now, high gas prices. This is a problem, not just here in the United States, but around the world. The price of gasoline has reached record levels recently in Europe and in Asia.
Gee, I wonder why.
In France, at the end of last month, it reached about $7 per gallon. In Japan, it's about $5.50 per gallon, the highest it's been in years. Of course, it's always painful when gas prices spike. Today, the price of gas in America on average is $3.40 a gallon. In California, it's much higher. The impact is real. But the fact is, we faced even worse spikes before. Just in the last decade, we saw it in 2012 when the price of gasoline hit $3.90. We saw it in 2014 when it hit $3.69. And as recently as 2019, we saw it surpass $3 in many places. The fact is, we always get through those spikes, but we're going to get through this one as well, and hopefully faster. But it doesn't mean we should just stand by idly and wait for prices to drop on their own. Instead, we're taking action. The big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand.
Mm.
And the smaller supply means higher prices globally for oil. To address these issues, I got on the phone with leaders from other countries grappling with this challenge to try to find ways to lower oil prices and ultimately to the price you pay at the pump. So today I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. In addition, I brought together other nations to contribute to the solution. India, Japan, Republic of Korea, and the United Kingdom have agreed to release additional oil from their reserves, and China may do more as well. This coordinated action will help us deal with the lack of supply, which in turn helps ease prices. The bottom line, today we're launching a major effort to moderate the price of oil, an effort that will span the globe in its reach and ultimately reach your corner gas station, God willing. I've worked hard these past few weeks in calls and meetings with foreign leaders, policymakers, to put together the building blocks for today's global announcement. And while our combined actions will not solve the problem of high gas prices overnight, it will make a difference. It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank. And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy. But right now, I will do what needs to be done to reduce the price you pay at the pump. From the middle class and working families that are spending much too much, and it's a strain, and you're the reason I was sent here to look out for you. There's another issue that we'll be addressing as well, because the fact is the price of oil was already dropping prior to this announcement, and many suggest in anticipation of the announcement. The price of gasoline in the wholesale market has fallen by about 10% over the last few weeks. But the price of the pump hasn't budged a penny. In other words, gas supply companies are paying less and making a lot more. And they do not seem to be passing that on to the consumers at the pump. In fact, if the gap between wholesale and retail gas prices was in line with past averages, Americans would be paying at least 25 cents less per gallon right now, as I speak. Instead, companies are pocketing the difference.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Biden, they're talking about inflation and gas prices. And I'll remind you, this dip into the strategic petroleum reserve is something that he said he would never, ever, ever do. It would have to be in the, you know, the most dire circumstances. And is that is what he's telling us now? You know, don't know. I guess time will tell. Good news right before the holidays. Coming up, I've got what's going to be a fun guest talking about something I'm so into, and it will be in town on December the 3rd. You know what I'm talking about, that little show at the Save Mart Center. We have the music director and writer of that little show with a tremendous group. He's going to be joining us in just a few seconds on KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Now, Ray Appleton.
If you've been listening for the last week or two, you know how high I am on this show. And it's coming back to our little city. December 2nd at the Save Mart Center. The Trans-Siberian Orchestra will lay out Christmas like you've never seen or heard it before. Now, I got to say, because this radio station has such a large signal, both on the AM and the FM, it's combined, you know, 100,000 watts. I don't care if you're in San Francisco, Santa Rosa, Santa Barbara, over on the Central Coast, Sacramento, Bakersfield. If this show comes within any distance of where you're, you know, currently planted, you got to see it. And it's so hard to describe on the radio. But somebody's going to help us describe it right now, and we'll find out more about it. Al Petrelli is the music director and one of the writers with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Al, I'm honored. Thanks for joining us on KMJ, sir.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me today, buddy. And it's so much fun listening to your introduction. I don't really have to say much. I could hear how excited you are.
Oh, I love it. I've seen it so many times.
Thank you so much.
How long have you been with this aggregation?
From the moment it was conceived by Paul O'Neill.
That's what I thought.
1995
is when I
first started recording. Yeah, from the jump. And it's like watching your children grow up, you know, 25. We're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the release of Christmas Eve and Other Stories, which we started working on late 95. So you're talking about 26 years old almost.
This thing has evolved, as you are well aware, over the years, to a much smaller form than it is now. I mean, that's where it began. How many people are involved with the show now, Al?
Yeah, my God, it's I'm going to say probably approaching 250 to 300 people between the folks on stage, the folks under the stage, above it, behind it, the folks in the office, caterers. Oh, yeah, listen, you got to understand, it's like anything else. Back in late 95, early 96, Paul said he just wanted to create a great art form. And he says, Al, if I can create great art, maybe this will catch on. So, 96, the record came out, and we sold a couple million copies out of the gate. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And then we did a second record called The Christmas Attic a few years after that.
Of course.
And that sold. You know, and I felt like I was in the Steely Dan version of Christmas. You know, no touring. Just, you know, we're making records and we're selling and we're getting a lot of airplay. This is fantastic, you know. And then in 99, somebody dared him to do a tour. So we had, you know, one box truck, two buses, and a fog machine. And, you know, that was it. So every year, Paul put everything back into the show. So we've been touring, with the exception of 2020, we've been touring every year consecutively, and he would add another truck, another bus, another special effect. And the thing just grew up, again, exceeded all of our expectations. And I'm just so proud to be back this year. First of all, the return of live music, to come back to your community in Fresno, who's always embraced this as part of their tradition. And to celebrate Paul's 25th anniversary with Christmas Eve and Other Stories, it's so over the top, it's so exciting, it's so emotional, it's so heartfelt, and it's just good to be back to work.
This is something the entire family can dig. And in trying to explain it to somebody who's never seen or heard or experienced it before, it ain't easy. You just have to go, because it's in front of you, it's above you, it's to your left, it's to your right, it's behind you. It is massive. And
it's everywhere. Yeah, you're right.
What does it take every year to get this thing up and running on the road? I mean, obviously, you fine-tune the shows a little bit so they're always different. And with, you know, that many performing people, that's got to be kind of hard.
Well, you know what? It's kind of difficult, but we have the greatest crew, the greatest production heads, great management, the O'Neill family. We rehearse every aspect of this for almost 30 days. We set up camp in Omaha, Nebraska, and we rehearse at the Mid-America Center just over the river. And they rehearse, they choreograph the trucks pulling in, pulling out, the buses pulling in, the crew rolling the stages to where they're supposed to be. Every aspect is rehearsed. So opening night at the Mid-America Center about a week and a half ago was a perfect first show. The other night we finished up in Colorado Springs. It was their perfect first show because every show that I do, like when I get to Fresno, it may be my 10th show, but it's going to be your first show. So we treat it as a first show every time we roll in. And again, muscle memory, just knowing what to do, when to do it. The crew, listen, the crew had 30 days to build the set. They had 8 hours to build it the second show, you know. So I can't do my job without them. And they take this as seriously as I do. And most of them have been with me for 20-something years now, too. So we're all growing up together.
The caliber of musicianship is frightening.
It's ridiculous.
As a musician myself, I mean, I'm in awe of the players that you get to spell this whole thing out. I mean, you're borrowing some big cats from named bands that come in and, you know, once or twice a year jump in with you and perform this thing. It's amazing.
Yeah, you listen, they're individually, they're all the best of the best, you know. But what's interesting about this band is that when you put them in a room, there's a certain chemistry that exists when you put all those particular players in this room and play this music. And that's the thing, it's not tangible. You know, there's a certain chemistry, a certain magic. There's a certain something that occurs with live rock and roll. And a lot of the guys on stage, the men and women, have been with me for a lot of years. And as soon as we get into a room, this band takes on its own vibe, its own character, you know. And I think that's what the audience realized, that we perform as a band. It's a unit. It's not a bunch of individuals up there just coming in for a couple months a year. For a lot of us, it's year-round and full-time. I don't do anything else. And, you know, for some of the singers and a couple of the other musicians, you know, hey, listen, they go do their side projects or whatever they want to do the rest of the year. But when we come together, this is their home. This is their family, and this is their priority. And there's a certain stink that occurs in rock and roll. And in the most the good sense of the word stink, that when you play these chords and the band hits a downbeat, everybody in the audience just goes, damn, that's good.
Why Christmas? How did the whole Christmas thing come about?
Oh, God.
I mean, there's so many other things you could be doing, but why Christmas?
You know, I'll tell you. So the short of it is, Paul called me up back in 95, okay? And he goes, I have this idea. And he goes, can you get in the studio with me? I'm like, yeah, dude, okay, give me a minute. I'll be right there. So I got in my truck and drove into New York City, got into the studio we were working at. And then I went upstairs and he put the faders up on what was to become Christmas Eve, Sarajevo, 1224. And I looked at him like, dude, what's with the Christmas song? And he laughed, you know. And he goes, well, it's not really a Christmas song. It's a soundtrack that's depicting events that took place on Christmas Eve during the war in Sarajevo. Like, okay, you got my attention. Anyway. He told me that there was a classical cellist who would go to the town square and play, you know, Mozart, Brahms, Tchaikovsky, whatever, on his cello in protest of the bombing raids. And when he told me that story, the hair on my arm kind of stood up. Because in 1990, I was Alice Cooper's musical director, and I played in Zagreb and Belgrade before the war. And I told him, dude, I was in that town square. I could tell you what it looked like, smelt like. Just press record. And I started playing the opening notes to that song, and that little lightning strike right there was magic. And that song went on to be the number one song in America. If you remember, going back to Winter 95, it was the number one requested song in America overnight.
It was huge.
I mean, dude, you know, sports radio, talk radio, Christian radio, country radio, at the time, AOR, top of every format was playing it because nobody had ever heard anything like that. And that was the spark that led us to the conversation we're having right now.
I can just imagine trying to sell this to a radio station that's not familiar with your product, although that would be impossible to find now. But, yeah, we're a group of 200 or 300 that play Christmas songs. You're like, what? You know, it's
what? I'll be home for Christmas, White Christmas. You know, they're like, we get sandwiched. I'm like, really? But people, again, going back to Paul Sabin, he just wanted to make a great art form, you know. And he accomplished that with that song. It was powerful. It was moving. It was dark. It was uplifting. It was all these emotions in 3.5 minutes, you know, with my guitar just shredding all over it. Who would have thought?
Al, my audience has heard me struggle in trying to explain this show on radio, which is tough. But I want to give you the opportunity. For somebody who's not seen the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, how would you relate the show to them? How do you describe it?
You know, it's kind of like trying to describe a lightning strike.
There you go. You know, that works.
Unless you're out in the field, which I don't suggest you do. Listen, musically, what I noticed from my vantage point, standing downstage center, I look in the audience and I see the ages run from like 1 year old to, I don't know, 95 years old. 3-4 generations of families sitting together, rejoicing, enjoying Paul's story, fists in the air, sometimes some tears, you know, whatever it is. So I think that the attraction musically is that there's something for everybody. We do pieces by the great composers, you know, Mozart, Beethoven, Grieg. You have traditional Christmas themes. You have good old-fashioned rock and roll. You have gospel, R&B, just incredible singers, incredible musicianship.
The voices are staggeringly brilliant. I'm amazed.
It's over the top, dude. And then you wrap it up with the biggest rock and roll production on the planet. You know, when I left the Allstate Arena in 2019, our last show, I counted, I think it was 21 tractor trailers and 12 buses in the parking lot. I was like, God almighty, 20-something years ago, we had like, you know, a box truck and 2 buses. This is crazy, you know. But I think, so you got this incredible rock and roll production. You have bombastic, over-the-top. It's just like you had said, there's not a bad seat in the house because the production kind of envelops the entire arena. The last row in the arena becomes the front row. The front row becomes the last row. It's crazy.
Amen.
You have incredible musicianship, but at the center of it, and this is what I noticed over the last bunch of years as I'm getting a little bit older, is that Paul's story is basically about missing someone. You know, at the end of his story, it always ends in a very Frank Capra-esque manner that it's got a happy ending. But if you think about it, everybody in the audience and everybody, you know, on stage and under the stage can insert their life situation into Paul's work because everybody, especially around the holidays, misses somebody. And there's always an empty chair at the dining room table. And especially after the last 20-something months we've had together, there's a lot of empty chairs, brother. And I think that, you know, not making my pain less or more than your pain, but mm-hmm. as long as you understand that everybody in the building is feeling the same thing, at least you're not alone, you know. Doesn't make it any easier or any better, but at least, you know, for that 2.5 hours, everybody's on the same page and we could all hold hands, albeit figuratively, literally, virtually, whatever. And just know that, okay, you know, we all have the same thing going on. Man, maybe it makes it a little bit more palatable. Or just shake the world off your shoulders for 2 hours and change. And walk out of this smiling and go, man, that was the greatest show I'd ever seen. Hopefully. That's my job, is to hopefully you guys think that.
It is. Al, I'm out of time, but I'm honored that you joined us. I cannot wait for December 2nd to see the show again. And just keep doing it, please. You know, just keep doing it forever.
I have every intention on, you know. Listen, Paul said he wants this to live past all of us. He wants this to go on forever. And if younger generations keep coming out, then maybe they will. Listen, much love to you and your family. Please stay safe, and I'll see you next week.
You got it, sir. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure.
Al Petrelli on KMJ. He's the music director and one of the writers for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And this year, this theme of, you know, 25 years of that first one is just going to be great. You're going to love it. And if you don't have your tickets yet, get them. Because this thing is just a rock and roll monster. It's for the entire family, and it will put you in the Christmas spirit like you have never been in the Christmas spirit before.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
You've got to see that show. You've got to see that show. You've got to see that show. I wish I could buy every one of you a ticket, but I can't do that. Maybe someday when I win the lottery. It's just so good. Anyway, today's Daily Buzz question at KMJNow.com. Should the definition of fully vaccinated now include a booster shot? Oh, that's interesting. Should the definition of fully vaccinated now include the booster shot? Okay, let us know. KMJNow.com. And the Daily Buzz question is sponsored by the man who I talked to for hours this morning, Dr. Buzz and the Buzz Allergy Asthma and Sinus Centers. Anyway, that's so good. The mega detective, Rocky Pipkin, is going to join us in the next hour. And he was called in to join the big team that was trying to hunt down this guy, Travis Scott, and the whole fiasco that happened in Houston that took 10 lives with the stampeding of the stage. And it was a mess. And yesterday he was told by the people in charge, stand back, stop, it's over for the moment. And apparently this rapper, who was also the co-promoter of the show, is now willing to accept, you know, what's coming to him. And we'll see. We'll learn a lot more than we did last time. When Rocky talked to us at the beginning of this, his affiliation with this awful case, he couldn't say anything. Anything. It was a very dull interview, and I knew it would be because he just couldn't speak to any of the details of what was coming down. But he's in a different position now, and we'll learn a lot more in the next hour. I'm convinced of it. And there's a lot to get into today on the program. A ton. Ted Nugent. I got to slip this in here. Ted Nugent says he wants to give the acquitted assailant, notice that word, acquitted, Kyle Rittenhouse, a lifetime supply of ammunition. And he wants to start a gun training class in his name. Ted is one of a kind. He's just a very, very different person. But that's what the veteran singer, you know, guitarist, relayed in a recent interview. Rittenhouse, you know, is the Illinois teenager who did what he did, and he went through that awful trial where the prosecution was awful, and yeah. And, you know, Nugent is a very conservative 72-year-old rocker. Sounds familiar. And he explained on his podcast, I'm going to get a hold of Kyle Rittenhouse, and I'm going to provide him with a lifetime supply of ammunition. And I'm going to begin the Kyle Rittenhouse Tactical Masterclass, because as a young man, boy, did he do good. He knew that weapon. He was a samurai as a teenager. That those unbelievable, traumatic, physically assaultive conditions, and through all of that, he did the right job. End quote from Nuge. So the support echoes what Nugent is, what he's getting from a lot of people who think that this is just a wonderful thing, is great. You can only imagine the other side of it, too. There are people that want Nugent's scalp because he's going to do this. But, you know, the evil Kyle Rittenhouse. But there's no middle ground on this, even with Ted Nugent. You know, there's no middle ground on him. You either love him or you hate him. And this is the type of case that evokes all kinds of emotions. But there are a number of people in the rock business who, for whatever reason, have glommed onto this kid, and they've had very negative things to say about him, or they've had very positive things to say about him. Last week, the activist rockers Rage Against the Machine, I like them, they responded in opposition to the Rittenhouse verdict. They said the shooter killed people who were fighting for racial justice, and he claimed self-defense. That's their quote. Again, trying to work race into this. It's like that's all MSNBC was on for weeks during this trial. You know, Rage called it settler logic of America and the founding myth. Whiteness must cast itself as a victim in order to justify its violence against those resisting oppression. Welcome to the land of the free and the home of the brave, according to Rage Against the Machine. Okay, like I say, there's not a lot of middle ground. But if you're Kyle Rittenhouse, you're not going to have to buy any more ammo for the rest of your life, apparently, because Terrible Ted, the Motor City Madman, is going to take care of that. Coming up, we have Rocky Pipkin, as I explained. We've got an incredible story about a couple of conservative commentators. They've resigned over some things that Tucker Carlson has said about January the 6th. So that's not one happy conservative family over at Fox. No, no. We also have a story about crabs and lobsters and octopuses. And I just have something for everybody today on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ and the Ray Appleton Program. Hour number two with Rocky right after this. Don't move.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.